Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Buliwa Gabaza, and for today, we get into a conversation about the world of mobile money on the African continent, more specifically remittances. It's a discussion that we've had on a number of occasions, but today we're approaching it very differently, looking at some of the regulatory aspects, around the remittance market and, some of the opportunities that stand in that space. To unpack what's happening in African remittances as it pertains to mobile money, we are joined here by Stephen Chege, who is the chief regulatory and external affairs officer for Vodacom Group. Stephen, greetings to you today.
Hi, Mudia. Hi, all the listeners. I'm good this morning. How are you?
No, alive, good, well, and thriving on this point. I think where I want us to begin, Stephen, a couple of months ago, in the Financial Mail, we ran a very big cover story around this call to perhaps get some of the internet companies to, chip in on infrastructure costs out there. And one of the things that came out of that discussion and that investigation is that in Europe, where we saw a similar push by operators, you can write a letter or make an appeal to the European Union, and you can have a centralized telecoms body that can make, that you can appeal to make decisions about some of these things and push forward. Now, when it comes to the African continent, because that harmonization isn't there as much as it is, I was hoping that today where we could begin this discussion is to say, in a mobile money sense, where do we stand when it comes to harmonizing some of the regulation, just to make sure that efforts around being able to send and receive money on the continent are made easier. Understanding, of course, that Africa is not homogenous. You've got many regulatory regimes and all of that, but there are common problems across the continent. So where do we stand from that point of view as a point of departure?
Okay, Mudiwa. So as you've correctly pointed out, Africa is very many different countries. And all these countries are at different levels of development in terms of their regulatory frameworks in how they see money. And this, of course, poses a challenge that we may have that is not there in Europe. Europe can speak in one voice. Anything passed by Brussels is applied equally around all the European countries. So in Africa, you have to go country by country. Having said that, you then have to look at the markets where mobile money has really developed to see how far legislation has gone in terms of supporting the framework for this. And you're looking at markets in Kenya, in Nigeria, South Africa. And these are markets that traditionally have had a long history in banking and subsequently put their foot out there and started trying different platforms like mobile money. More recently, we've seen them growing to allow smaller MTOs, money transfer organizations that also exist to provide that need to transfer money between people and between countries. So the regulatory framework is really a product of history. So we'll go country by country, and some are more developed than others. And that's the challenge that we have to face. Vodacom has investments from South Africa all the way to Egypt. So this is South Africa, Lesotho, Mozambique, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, and DRC and Egypt. So each of these markets we look at specifically, and we go through the different legislation that is provided by the country and the role of the Reserve Bank or the central banks in these markets, and ensure that the platform that is used for mobile money has a working framework that enables in-country peer-to-peer and merchant transfers, and also now international money transfer, which is becoming more and more important.
With everything that you've just said, Stephen, perhaps what you could maybe give us some insight into, given the progress that you've just explained, what's missing, right? And for the layman, I understand that we're talking very complex issues, but if we were to, if we were running a 100-meter race, right, and we are looking and the destination at the end of the track is, you know, full ubiquity, being able to easily send money between countries, you know, doing that below, you know, some of the three, below the intended 3%, you know, fee rate, doing it cheaper and faster than the banks, all of this stuff that we're looking at in this mobile money utopia. If that is the goal, right, how many meters have we run now in this 100-meter race? If it's even possible to contextualize it like that.
I think we've done very well, Ndiwa, because we're on the track, we have the shoes, we have the starting blocks, and the gun has gone, and we've left the starting blocks. I think also uniquely, Africa is been better positioned in this for very many historical reasons. A lot of our people had been unbanked, and mobile money platforms came in to bridge that particular need. And therefore, we learned the tools that are needed to get money to someone's hands directly and not to a bank account. But let me say this. The early lessons that were learned in Africa with peer-to-peer mobile money transfers started being sold for cross-border transfers. So you had people who would have children in the neighboring country for whatever reason. You have people who would have commerce and businesses between countries. And therefore, it became logical to solve the problem that existed, which is being able to send money from one country to the next, but also use a channel that people handle every day. You'll agree with me that everyone leaves home with their phone or two phones, and people have two phones for whatever reason. But, you know, you always have it near you. And if you're able to receive money in your phone, basically, you've been able to bridge that need that is quite essential. So what has happened over time is it had to be solved for. It's easy for a GSM call to happen between two countries. So the learnings from that were taken into mobile money. A GSM call basically goes either through a direct interconnection between the two countries or through a hub that then switches the call to the other country. So that is how mobile money is actually transferred, let's say between Zimbabwe and Kenya. You have to go through a hub. The hub then translates the value of the money from the local currency of one country into the local currency of the other country and deliver it to the mobile wallet. And right now it is quite seamless, which is one of the things that you want with mobile money. You don't want to send it and then have someone pick it after a day or two. The proof of the transfer really, at least in the day and age we're living in, is that the money was transferred, a receipt of the transfer is available to the transferor, and the transferee gets notification that money is coming. And then soon enough, the money should be in their wallet. So that is happening. And to that extent, to use your analogy, we're off the blocks and we are running. But is it happening enough? Could the regulatory frameworks be more harmonized to allow it to happen at a more larger scale? That's the question that remains to be answered. And that's what will get us to the finishing tip and to see whether we beat Usain Bolt's world record.
No, I certainly hear you there, and we all hope that we'll be closer to the finish line, you know, soon enough. And I like the fact that at least you're striking a positive tone to say that at least we're off the blocks and there is progress and there is an appetite, you know, to solve for, you know, all of those issues. Funny enough, I remember a few years ago, it must have been, I'm going to call it 2018. Yeah, about 2018. In my more enterprising days, I was doing some business cross-border. Interestingly enough, it was to Kenya using one of your services, which is M-Pesa. And I remember at the time, I banked with Standard Bank. But the intermediary that I used at the time was WorldRemit. And what impressed me was how quick these things were able to happen, right? And I can imagine the complexity of agreements, handshakes, and all types of things that are happening in the background to make that happen, because money left my Standard Bank account, went through World Remit, got to somewhere in Kenya. I assume it was M-Pesa, because I was then able to transfer money into someone's M-Pesa mobile wallet within 3 minutes. This entire, you know, transaction was done. And I remember at the time I was like, how is this possible when I'm finding it hard just to do a simple interbank transfer in South Africa, and that takes 2 or 3 days? That's how long it took, you know, at least in 2018. So I can just imagine the complexity that, you know, someone like yourself is probably having to lead and navigate to make those types of transactions, you know, happen. And I'm sure that by now, the speed by which some of these things are happening is probably even faster as well.
Yeah, so you've got to look out for two things in that in that example you've given. The speed. So I said earlier, the proof of payment, you know, someone wants to know that a transaction has been conducted. So they want to get a notification that money has left, and then the amount of money they're receiving, and then shortly enough, they should receive the money. But you've also got to have in mind the security of the transfer. And when you think about the security of the transfer is when you now start unpacking the complexity of the agreements that you have mentioned. What it means is that in one country, you have done a lot of work with the Reserve Bank or the Central Bank, the regulator, to convince them about the AML conditions. Basically, the AML and KYC conditions, which is to say that you know who is sending the money. You're able to verify the amount of money that was sent. You have done a background check to be able to say this is a normal user. This is Mudiwa sending $100 across to someone else. You comply with the requirements for anti-money laundering regulations. You then have a system that is able to upload that money either directly or through a hub. And the hub then says, I've received $100 from Mudiwa and I need to transfer. You said your business was in Kenya, so that would be Kenya shillings. I need to transfer Kenya shillings to his business there. It then translates the equivalent of $100 into Kenya shillings and then remits that amount. For that to happen seamlessly within minutes, it means that the wallet that is paying the amount is pre-funded. And then the $100 that you've remitted goes into to put back the amount that has been paid to your client. So this happens very quickly. And as you said, very complex contracts supporting this, but also very sort of maturing and growing and regulatory systems between the two countries. And this is where now we come in as operators. We sit with the reserve banks, we go through what we want to do, and we explain this to them. And in time, it becomes something that falls within a regulatory framework. They issue regulations around it, and we ensure that we adhere to it. So when we're offering this service to a customer, it's just not the quick transfer, but also the certainty and security of the overall service that we promise and deliver.
You know what's interesting with everything that you know, you've just said, I'm now wondering, because the speed, for me, it's the speed of the transactions, because as someone who went to school I did information systems in school, and that's what my first degree was in. And I remember there was this statement that I've held on to, where they say that the best technology is the type of technology that you don't even know it's there. It just works. Things just work. You don't even have to worry about it. And it does seem as if that, you know, when it comes to, you know, this type of conversation, as you said, we've made a lot of progress. As Vodacom, right, and as, you know, someone who's wrangling and putting these agreements, working to put these agreements in place in the background, what's keeping you up at night right now, if anything? And I guess the question I'm asking is, from a Vodacom point of view, what are the gaps that you guys are trying to solve, or have we reached a maturity stage where the biggest point is trying to maybe deal with efficiencies, you know, more than anything else?
Far from it. We, like I said, to go back to your earlier analogy, we haven't hit the 60-meter mark. I think there's still a good run for us to go. And I'll tell you how it starts out. Traditionally, there's a very large diaspora from Africa in the north, yeah, in the US, in the UK, and such countries. And what we have seen in the first, phase of international remittance is a lot of the money flows coming from the north to the global south or to our countries. But this has been peer-to-peer sort of transfers where money is transferred from presumably one relative to another in an African country. But what is happening now and what we're developing as a next step in this is to move this from peer-to-peer to business-to-business and also move this to a customer-to-business proposition where someone seated in Washington could be supporting a business in Kenya, is able to, through their mobile phone or in Tanzania, buy something which is cash to that particular business sitting in Dar es Salaam. And the value of it goes to someone in Dar es Salaam. And the product, whatever it is, maybe is delivered to someone else in the same city. So this is the layering that we're looking forward to in actually making this ecosystem more robust, not just as a pipe to ensure that money flows directly. We're also looking at getting businesses that are anchored in the West that look to send money to NGOs and programs like that directly, instead of sending this through very tedious middle parties and then it goes to the people they want to target, whether it's clinics or hospitals or people who are receiving aid. It could be very seamless, seated in whichever capital they're seated in the West, for them to actually send their money directly to the recipient and bring about the change that they want to do through their NGO. So this is a layering that we're looking to grow, to basically move it from the initial steps of just completing a transfer in a short time, which is a huge gain. As you said, it's a wow factor that the money gets in a very short time. But to make it more meaningful, to make it more reliable, to make it more, the way things are done and speed up the velocity of those transfers.
I actually like the fact that, you know, you're touching on the business-to-business aspect, because one of the things I was going to ask is to say, how much of the same remittance infrastructure is, I guess, involved in some of the more what people consider mainstream, transactions? Because I do know that one of the big plays when it comes to the world of fintech and specifically mobile money is, you know, using mobile money as a way to increase participation when it comes to, you know, e-commerce. The use case of a person, who exists and is able to pay a business and all of that stuff in country, you know, is quite well established. I grew up in Zimbabwe and there's EcoCash there. And very easy. You can pay businesses, you can pay small merchants, even the big retailers, all of that stuff. Everyone has that. But when it comes to, you know, making a payment, let's say for Spotify, Netflix, all of these, other things, you know, that are there, would I be correct in venturing to say that, you know, that sort of overlaps with what you're talking about right now?
Yeah. I mean, you start with small businesses, so, you know, SMEs sort of looking at growing the opportunities. But then even the big platforms. And the big platforms really don't care how you pay them. They actually adopt what's convenient in the region. So if you see what's happening in East Africa, you pay for your Netflix via M-Pesa. You pay for, you know, these things, you know, based on how people want to pay in a particular region. So getting involved in those kind of platforms, making sure that people can trust the platform for payment. You know, no one ever questions whether a Visa payment will be settled. It's a Visa payment. I've done it. It's going to go through. It should become the same for mobile money, where people are able to trust that an international remittance on any platform is going to be accepted and it's going to go through. And this is how we grow this this pie. And we've seen in Africa where not too many people have credit cards, but people tend to have phones. So this could be a very good alternative where we grow our own local platforms the first payment mode, I think, should always be a mobile money payment mode, because then everyone is able to participate and everyone is able to complete the payment. So yeah, that's an area we're looking to grow into and solidify. There's a lot of innovation still to come, I can tell you that.
No, we're certainly hopeful, you know, for all of those, for all of those movements that are there. So when it comes to, I guess, the business to business aspect, because like you said, people are already able to pay for things like your Netflix, etc. When it comes to, I guess, the cross-border business to business aspect that you're talking about right now, for a person who's maybe listening and just trying to conceptualize what you mean, are we just talking like, you know, maybe I'm in the US and I want to pay my supplier in my supplier in Tanzania or something like that, and I just want to, and that supplier prefers that I pay using mobile money and, you know, do it that way. And I'm asking because using the example that I had earlier on, it does seem as if some of that was already available. So what's the, I guess, the streamlining or the difference in what we're talking about?
Yeah, so the person who's sitting in the US, to use your example, to send the money or to make a payment in Tanzania is aggregated by someone else. So it's aggregated right now by Wave, which is very popular in America. Then the money he has sent goes through a hub, and the hub could be Tunes or Phone Africa, and then the money is then translated into Tanzanian shillings. Okay, it is possible for us to control the entire ecosystem, which is one of the areas we shall look to grow into, whereby he is natively sending either through an app that already sits in a wallet that then sends the money through to his colleague's wallet in Dar es Salaam or directly to a merchant in Dar es Salaam. They guess the good. It's another area of growth for international remittances, for at least for in the case of M-Pesa, that's in the pipeline. And this is going to give an end-to-end solution about how you do these payments and further entrench it as a solid payment mechanism. Because at some point, you have to think about it. If you're switching through MasterCard or Visa, this is some different ecosystem. If you're switching natively inside a mobile money ecosystem, you know, that makes more sense for us as Vodacom, because M-Pesa is our product. But not to say that we don't have very beneficial collaborations with companies like Visa. Actually, we do, and we work very closely with them.
And it's interesting that, you know, we're talking about the different ecosystems and also those global payment systems like a MasterCard, like a Visa. Because when it comes to the mobile money paradigm, one of the things I was keen to pick your brain on is because those two companies did well, you know, to bring about the use of digital cards and all of that stuff. And back in the day, I can't even remember the words that they used to use, because you had magnet strips and what all of that stuff that was happening back in the day, and they figured that stuff out, is to say, in the mobile money paradigm, do you see, I guess, operators evolving to a point where there is a MasterCard / Visa equivalent, you know, to switch and, you know, be able to make payments? Or do people continue operating in their buckets, and then you just have agreements, handshakes between different ecosystem providers to ensure that interoperability?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see that, because let's be honest, card payments have been around forever. They're very well established. The rails are well established, and everyone sort of is very comfortable with them. But mobile money is also becoming a lifestyle thing. Everyone walks around with their phone, and nowadays your phone has so much information. And it's quite integral in how people see themselves. So by putting the payment through the phone and natively through a platform like mobile money, we think it's something that's going to grow. What may need to happen for mobile money to really entrench itself is for all the different ecosystems, because in many countries, you have one or two operators at least. sometimes three. We need to get to a situation where all those mobile money platforms are interoperable. And also to allow that interoperability to happen in between countries. So I would let's say, leave Joburg now and fly to Kinshasa, and I should be able to use my phone to pay for my coffee. If we get to that kind of ecosystem where all these different wallets and different platforms are talking to each other, then it really becomes a credible option in terms of being a different switching platform compared to the existing ones. And I think that would be a very exciting proposition.
All right. As we launch today's conversations, once again, I'm here for the curiosities, you know, at the end. For yourself, because you're in the world of regulation, obviously you have to understand, you know, all of this stuff. You know, are you a techie, or did you find yourself having to, you know, come to grips with the finance aspect and the tech aspect?
I've been so long in tech, I'd consider myself a techie. I come from a legal background, so I think I have a good combination to be in the regulatory space. I've been in tech now for over 15 years. I was there when M-Pesa was started. I was actually a young version of myself when the thing started out, and I've actually carried the torch for opening up the regulatory environment for GSM and now for mobile money for quite a long time. So it has been my business to understand this intimately and make sure that it keeps on growing. And that's why I think the vision that I've just mentioned to you, if we can get these ecosystems talking to each other and working together, you should be able to travel as you are now in Mombasa with nothing but your phone. You don't have to cash out and get Kenya shillings and come back with them to your country and you wonder what to do with them. No, you should just be able to seamlessly move around the phone. But we need to get the different regulatory infrastructures to the same level and pointing in the same direction. So countries will always be ahead. Some will be catching up. Some will be thinking about it differently. But we're always there to push what we feel has worked and what we feel will actually open up the space for more development.
All right. So that's where we end off today's session. It has been, you know, great. I think we went a little bit into the weeds about what's going on in the regulatory environment, you know, in Africa when it comes to mobile money. But that's the reason and purpose, you know, why we have this conversation, is to unpack and go below the surface when it comes to these very, you know, important discussions. You know, quite key, you know, to hear some of the progress that Stephen was just outlining for us in terms of regulation on the continent when it comes to mobile money. And he says that it just makes sense that, you know, mobile money be as ubiquitous as possible, because if there's one thing that everyone is carrying around with them, it is their phone, and it's become a hub for so many things and in a person's life. Also giving us some insight, you know, into the, if this is a 100-meter race, you know, where have we gone? And he says, we've got the shoes, starting blocks are there. We're on, the gun has been, you know, has gone off, and we are, you know, well on the way. But there are a number of things that still need to be done. He does say that there is some maturity in a number of markets. But as he said at the end there, you know, different countries do think about some of these things, you know, in different ways. And the big thing that he's advocating for is to have all of these different ecosystems, you know, talking to each other, so that all a person needs to do is to maybe travel from country to country or wherever they are, be able to do business cross-border, you know, just using their phone, you know, as they move around, but also, you know, just, you know, as a, I think the finance people use the word as a rail, as a payment rail, you know, mobile money, you know, does have the potential, you know, to rival what's going on in the card space. Of course, the cards have had, you know, decades on mobile money. And one of the more interesting things that he did say earlier on is that, you know, the things that we see on peer-to-peer payments for mobile money were actually as a result of innovation when it came to, if I remember correctly, he said people trying to solve for the cross-border element, and then, you know, that ended up getting there, walking us through the different you know, aspects of, you know, if you send money from one country to another, what's happening in between. And it's great understanding, you know, all of those intricacies. And then I think lastly, you know, just great to understand, you know, how a 15-year career, you know, has in tech specifically, has found Stephen, you know, trying to grapple and make progress with some of these issues. So that's been it. We were in discussion. Thank you so much. We were talking to Stephen Chege, who is the Chief Regulatory and External Affairs Officer for Vodacom Group. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiyo Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.